Cindy Iadice is back on the show with us today. Cindy is the founder of the Flagman Safety Campaign, which was created to better protect tow truck drivers, first responders, DOT workers, and really anybody who's pulled off on the side of a highway. Cindy lost her brother, Corey, after he was assisting a disabled vehicle back in 2020 and was hit by a drunk driver. And the last time we had Cindy on was late December, and she had hinted to us that she was going to start putting programs in place for K through 12, and it was going to start in Fairfield. And apparently here we are, April of 2023, and those programs are about to roll out. Hey, Cindy, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me back, Melissa. I can hardly believe it.
I can't believe it either. I love when you come on the show, Cindy, because I think it's extraordinary the strength that you and your family have shown after the passing of Corey and what he went through, what he stood for as a tow truck driver, and the importance of safety on the roads. And I love that this is now going to be rolled out in schools. So let's back up for a quick second and just talk about generally what the Flagman Safety Campaign is, if somebody hadn't heard of it before.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk with your listeners again about Flagman Safety. So we're actually coming up on the third year anniversary of Corey's death. He was struck and killed on April 22nd, 2020. My family and I have been motivated by the pain and the grief of his tragic loss, which was avoidable. And we set out to create a program to protect other first responders and highway workers from such a fate, such a difficult ending for Corey. So, I'm really excited. Back in town, launching our K through 12 education program on Monday. And this is an annual program, Melissa, and this is our pilot launch to test the program that we've developed in a relatively short amount of time that we feel is going to make a huge impact, not only here in Connecticut, but nationally. So from K to 2, kindergarten to second grade, we're going to be introducing kids to who works on the side of the road, right? What they do, what they're driving, what they're wearing, and, you know, the importance of helping everyone get home safely. When kids in the 3 through 5 grade program, we're going to be working with the kids and the first responders, compassion, and trying to help foster this relationship between who works in the community and the kids that are in the school system. And in middle school, we're going to hone in on the importance of being an active passenger for kids in their car, alerting their parents or their driver anytime they see anything happening on the side of the road. And that's going to lead into those same kids becoming responsible drivers.
Cindy, how long did it take you to come up with the curriculum? Because I know it's very age-based, you know, like those two programs, the K through 5 and then the middle school, they are related, but they're very different, obviously, because based on their ages and what they can handle. But how long did it take you to come up with the curriculum for this?
We came up with the concept last May, and we've, you know, pretty much just had our heads down and working to develop something really spectacular. So we've been working really hard since I last talked to you. We started the overall concept in the fall, and we also have 9 through 12 in there, right? Active passenger turns into responsible driver, mm-hmm. and those young drivers go on to be, you know, responsible adult drivers. So the last 4 months, we've worked really hard to flesh out what it is we want to go into the schools and teach the children.
So this is going to be in presentation form. Like, this is you guys going into schools and presenting this, or it's versus, you know, having it added to, like, I don't know, like their health classes or something. This is you guys going in and getting the attention of the students during, like, an assembly.
Yeah, so we're going to hold 30-minute assemblies in K through 5 and 45 minutes for middle school kids, 1 hour for high school kids. We're going to be going into, so for the pilot program, yes, we're going into every single school. I'll be at every single presentation. We are going to go in with first responders and highway workers in the community so the kids can, so they can meet them, see them face-to-face, engage with them. We're going to present some scenarios on what that looks like when you see something on the side of the road. We've got some props. We're going to have uniformed first responders and highway workers, and we're going to engage the kids in a really fun interactive program where they're going to be learning and but having fun doing it. Eventually, it'll be available online. But for the pilot launch, we wanted to just get in there and see how it looks and feels. But ultimately, it's going to be made available. Everything that you need to run this program in your school district will be made available by the team at Flagman.
So Cindy Iodice is here. We're talking about Flagman safety, and the campaign is now going to take its next step in bringing a pilot program into schools K through 12. And you're starting in Fairfield. How many schools, and why Fairfield first to be your guinea pigs?
Yeah, well, I'm one of seven kids. We were all raised up in the Fairfield public school system, which is an excellent community. And, when I was little, I always wanted to go back and give back to my schools, Riverfield, Tomlinson, Roger Lilla High School. And, my family has been in Fairfield in the towing industry for, over half a century, and my dad and my brothers, my sister-in-law, my mom, just everybody. We've had this relationship with the first responders in the community, and it was a natural first step for us to launch it in the community where the relationships already exist.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love it. I'm also, was raised in Fairfield, so went through the elementary, middle schools there. I love it. There are a lot of schools in Fairfield, though. I mean, knocking out a ton.
let's see. What do we have? 17 schools. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And we're getting help from AAA. Fran Mako has been such a great advocate of Flagman. She's really helped us move forward expeditiously. And Lieutenant Smith says hello, Melissa.
Hi.
He's organizing the firefighters who are going to attend the assemblies and volunteer with the kids.
He's great. That's great. I mean, you've got a dynamite team behind you, and it's going to be wonderful. Cindy Iodice of the Flagman Safety Campaign is going to be going into, what was it, Cindy? 17 public schools in Fairfield? Is that how many you're going into? I'm trying to think how many. Did I count that correctly?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Well, there's 17 public schools, yes. And thank you to Fairfield Superintendent Michael Testani, who we just met with in January and proposed this idea that we've had for a little while and got the green light to go ahead through him. And also, Connecticut DOT and the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration gave Flagman its first yes in the form of a grant. So I definitely want to say thank you to Nick Just and Joe Cristalli, who, believed enough in our vision to help us take this really important first step.
Mm-hmm. How do we know if this is a success, the pilot program, Cindy? I know this is being, this is brand new, kids K through 12. And of course, we won't really know until these K through 15-year-olds, essentially, these 5 to 15-year-olds get on the roads themselves. But how do we know that it's worth the work that you've put in, obviously, but also for school districts to adopt this, whether it is through the program online or having somebody come into the schools and talk about this?
Yeah. So we've set up so we have this pre-survey, age-appropriate pre-survey questions for the kids to sort of gauge their knowledge before the assembly starts. And then we are administering these post-survey questions to test program retention, concept retention, and to see where the kids are. So we'll have some immediate numbers and ideas, metrics, following our pilot launch, which will help us, put in for more grants and, come back next year. And this is going to be an overtime program, right? It's not a one and done. This will be, the kindergartners between now and 12th grade will be exposed to Flagman every single year. Recently there's been a terrible problem with slow down, move over fatalities across the country. And I can't recall this happening before, since statistics have been collected, but between March 28th and April 9th, I think, 8 first responders were killed across the country. Shocking. It was almost
insane.
Like there were 3 in one day in different.
I remember you saying that. That's awful. It's just, it's unfathomable. And so when do you go into the schools? I meant to ask that. It's next week or?
Yeah, so we're starting a Monday afternoon at Roger Ludlow High School. And we are going to run our pilot program for 2 weeks. Unfortunately, because of the statewide testing for middle school, we're going to have to come back in September and hit the 3 middle schools in Fairfield. But, you know, in this time, we're going to definitely reach everybody in K through 5 and 9 through 12 for the pilot, the early part of the pilot launch.
And I know you've got a pretty big event on April 21st, I believe, involving Senator Blumenthal. What's going on?
Yes. We're holding a press conference at the Fairfield Fire Station with Senator Blumenthal, Superintendent Testani, the Fairfield First Select Woman, Brenda Kupchak, DOT, NHTSA, our first responders. And, you know, we'll be 1 week into the program at that point, into the pilot launch. We'll be able to talk about how it's going and talk about our hope for the future.
It's really exciting. And I just want to remind folks out there that this is going to be the kind of like a soft launch. It's going to be the pilot program being tested on Fairfield Public Schools. But if I have teachers or parents who are in different districts, Cindy, any idea when this would become potentially available to their school districts? Like what, you know, is there a timeline or even, you know, your website, would they get updates on that?
Yeah, you know, everything's dependent on funding, right? The program really needs to be funded. We're working on a shoestring budget right now because it's so important to show what Flagman is and how we can help save lives with our kids in the community who will then influence their families and their parents and their drivers. We hope to have it up and running relatively quickly. I think after we get the middle schools done in Fairfield, we'll have all the metrics that we need and all the information that we need on if anything needs to be changed, how it's working, how the kids like it, how the interaction is going for them. You know, a lot of local businesses have been donating gift cards to us to incentivize the kids to participate. Everybody's going to be participating in a poster contest. We're going to be creating slow down, move over walls in all of the schools with the kids' artwork. I'd like to get it up and running as quickly as possible. You know, just noting that 8 first responders have been killed across our country since March 28th, the problem has not gone away. In some ways, it's gotten worse. So, after the fall, I hope to make it widely available.
And if you want to learn more about this campaign, go to flagmansafety.com. So it's a great website, very user-friendly, flagmansafety.com. And Cindy Iadis, I always thank you for the work that you do, and I appreciate you giving us the time always on WICC. I look forward to seeing how this goes in Fairfield and hoping for more funding so that more school districts can get on board with this. It sounds great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely circle back and report back to you and your listeners about the success of the pilot launch. But, I'm always available. Anybody who emails flagmansafety.com is going to get me. I'm on the other end of that. So I'm available to Zoom and talk about more in depth about the pilot launch and, you know, our goals for the education program going forward. But, you know, we see ourselves in every state and then, eventually Flagman will be the global icon for Slow Down, Move Over.
I think that's fantastic. Again, the website is flagmansafety.com. Cindy Iadis, I look forward to seeing how the launch goes, and we will talk soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Blumenthal, I want to start by asking how you're feeling. I haven't talked to you since you were, I think, still in your hospital bed over the weekend.
That's right. Well, I'm feeling better and better every day. I had surgery on Sunday, Easter Sunday, and back home the next day doing PT, working from home, and looking forward to going back to D.C. on Monday.
I mean this in the most respectful way. You're a beast. I watched you at the I'm telling you, my husband and I were at the UConn parade, and we saw you. And he said, he goes, do you think Senator Blumenthal's okay? I said, maybe he's just got to get somewhere. Like when you got in the car to leave, I thought, oh, he's just getting on a plane to go somewhere. Like that's what I thought. I had no idea you were hurt. But I watched the video, like, from News 8. They got a shot of the fall, and I thought, how in the world did you keep walking? I was floored. I was really floored. I can't believe you kept walking.
It was such a magnificent parade. You know, the exuberance and exhilaration of the crowd and the UConn team and Coach Hurley, just everybody in the moment was so just inspiring. And so I really wanted to finish that parade and went to the viewing stand, listened to the ceremony. Then I knew something was wrong and that I better get to an emergency room, just get an x-ray. And sure enough, when I got to Greenwich Sanford, they said, you have a fracture of the femur, the upper femur, and you need to do something. And that something was surgery. They inserted a couple of pins, but it was just such a great parade. And that team has accomplished so much. I was just very proud to be there.
I mean, if you can give me some pointers on how to, you know, just, you know, enter into Hulk mode, you just let me know. I'll take that lesson any day. I just am very impressed. I mean, I loved the energy of it. I was very proud, you know, lifelong UConn fan, but I don't know. I don't know if I would have kept going. I was very floored when I saw the news. I was like, what? So I'm glad you're feeling better.
It's kind of like running a marathon, which I've done a number of times. There comes a point where, you know, you just have to put one foot in front of the other. And that's amazing. A little bit like life itself, as I've told my kids numerous times. But when I got to the hospital, the docs there were pretty disbelieving that I was able to finish. So, but I'm glad I did. It was just a great experience.
Yeah. I was even on the fence about reporting it because I thought there's no way he broke his femur. Like, there's just no way, because I watched you. I was like, there's no way. But you did. And I don't know. So I just, like I said, absolutely no disrespect. It's a good term to be called a beast. I just was very, very floored.
Compliment.
Okay,
I
good. Good.
Thank
good.
You.
Good. I'm glad. Let's talk about a couple of some big headlines coming out of Washington this morning. This is actually in our news today. The White House is warning about this animal tranquilizer. And forgive me, I'm sure I'm saying it incorrectly, but it's, I believe, pronounced xylazine. They said that it is an illicit fentanyl drug mixed with an animal tranquilizer. And they're calling it an emerging threat, which, according to reports, this is the first time a presidential administration has formally labeled a drug as an emerging threat. That I was shocked about, that we haven't done this in the past, because we've known, like, rainbow fentanyl, for example, was a huge problem last year. The rainbow colored pills and chalk like substances and everything. And we've obviously seen this issue getting worse at the border. What can you tell us about this morning? Or do you feel like we should have been making more of these emerging threat announcements with past drugs? Like, what can you comment on this?
This new drug is really not so new. It's been used for years as a tranquilizer and a pain medicine for animals. Xylazine is a kind of fentanyl, which, by the way, itself is 100 times the potency of heroin. Xylazine is many times the potency of fentanyl. So it is especially dangerous. And it is now mixed with other opioids and fentanyl derivatives to make these kinds of substances just real killers. And that's the reason for the issuance of this warning from the White House. It's well-founded. I'm not sure that there have been others. This may be the first one, but people should be aware that it can be mixed in the streets, so to speak, with other illicit drugs and sold as without people knowing that it's mixed with fentanyl. So it's adulterating the heroin or other drugs that people buy. And that's another reason to be especially wary, to have wide distribution of Narcan, naloxone, that permits overdoses to be reversed, and why I have welcomed the FDA making Narcone an over-the-counter non-prescription drug.
Why, or do we know how it's being marketed? Because we have heard, unfortunately, about, for example, even college students who are ordering drugs online sometimes because they have a pain that they got in a car accident, or they can't focus, so they think they're ordering like Adderall off the, you know, the dark marketplace, and it ends up having fentanyl in it. Do we know what this animal tranquilizer fentanyl mix is being marketed as? Like, even if it's the name of the drug, like, are they saying that this is, I guess, do people know that they're taking this type of drug, is what I'm getting at?
The most dangerous aspect of this drug is, in fact, your point exactly, that a lot of people don't know they are taking this drug because it may be mixed with other drugs. Someone may be buying heroin and it may be mixed with the heroin, or it may be sold directly and people may say, you know, this is the latest and greatest. But the point is that the drug trade on the streets has become ever more deadly, and one reason is the mixing of both fentanyl and xylazine with other kinds of drugs.
And really quick, Senator Blumenthal, do we know if, I think we've talked about this in the past, the reason that you would mix with something like an animal tranquilizer, regardless that it could kill your clients, it's because it's cheaper, right? Like, that's cheaper, why drug dealers are doing it.
It's cheaper, more powerful. You can say, this is really great stuff. You know, it's hard to get into the heads of someone selling drugs on the streets as a rational matter, but it's basically make more money.
Right. Like, it's cheaper for them to make, but they're still going to profit an awful lot because they're charging you the same, if not more, because it's just, quote, great stuff. So I appreciate
that these drugs are all synthetic. That is, they can be, they don't have to be made, you know, from an opium poppy plant. They can be made in a lab, so to speak. They're not what you would call labs, but they can be made synthetically.
And we're back with Senator Richard Blumenthal for a couple more minutes. Some classified documents that looked at the war in Ukraine were recently leaked less than a week ago. And this morning, ABC News gave us the information that, I guess this came from a Washington Post report, that it was a young man who worked on a military base and had shared the sensitive national security documents in an online group of acquaintances united by their love of guns and God. Senator Blumenthal, I know this has really put the White House in a frenzy since these documents were leaked. What exactly is it exposing, and what do you think about it, I guess, this morning? Like, where do we go from here?
What he has exposed are numerous documents, including photos that indicate what the war plans are for Ukraine, principally their plans for a counteroffensive, as well as efforts to provide arms and weapons for Ukraine, the levels of strength of their military, certainly deeply disturbing and potentially harmful to Ukraine and to our country. And so, very rightly, criminal investigation is underway. There is that report in the Washington Post this morning. I've seen it, that the man behind this massive leak of U.S. government's secrets has worked on a military base. He shared these highly classified documents with a group of acquaintances. He is someone who basically was disenchanted, that may be an understatement, with the government. But one way or the other, we need to investigate this leak of documents and, above all, continue to support Ukraine, which I do. I think they need and deserve more arms so they can make this counteroffensive in the spring successful, because they are defending democracy, not just for themselves, but for the world. If Putin isn't stopped there, he will keep going. And what this leak shows is that Ukraine, which we know is preparing for a counteroffensive, and hope it will be successful.
Does this lead Senator Blumenthal to having more of a crackdown on who gets access to classified documents? Like, I don't know who this person is. I know they haven't identified them, but the fact that they work on a military base, should they have even had any right to this, these classified documents?
We need to know how, in fact, he had access to these documents, because my understanding is, and I may have seen some of these documents, but not on a military base, in the classified setting in the basement of the Capitol, where we go, we leave our phones and other electronic devices at the door. We take no notes. We have no papers of our own. We're under very strict restrictions. We need to give back the documents after we're done with them, the actual copies. There's someone at the door to observe us when we leave. But there's no question that these were top secret reports, apparently, about the whereabouts and movements of some high-ranking political leaders and tactical updates on military forces, real geopolitical analysis. That's the reporting that has been done so far. I have not received a briefing. I'm still in Connecticut. Most of my colleagues are still in their home states. We will be getting a briefing, we believe, this week when we return to D.C. And certainly, I think we will all support a thorough investigation that will answer the question, very good question, that you've just asked, whether access to such documents should be restricted.
Senator Blumenthal, I appreciate your extra time this morning. Please continue to heal, and I look forward to checking in with you really soon.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, Melissa. Take care.
All right. Thank you again. Senator Richard Blumenthal here on WICC. I am so excited to have Dr. Vahid Behzadun back on the show, our cybersecurity expert here on Melissa in the Morning, but also an assistant professor of cybersecurity and networks at the University of New Haven. Vahid, it's been a while. How are you?
It's indeed been a while. I'm doing very well. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good. I've missed you, friend. I'm so glad you're back, and I hope to have you on a little more often. I've missed you on the show.
Oh, well, I've missed being on the show, and thank you so much for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. And what great timing, because I have to say, Vahid, you know the kind of brain I have. Artificial intelligence has become a daily thought for me. I can't really decide if I'm more on board with it than not, but I would love to get, let's open up the conversation with you this morning on just what you think about like ChatGPT and, you know, the good, the bad, and everything in between. What do you think?
Well, since it's my job to think about this stuff, I have a lot of different thoughts. But in general, I think the pace of advances in artificial intelligence has been much, much faster than what I expected or many of my colleagues expected. You probably heard that ChatGPT and similar solutions are called large language models. Mm-hmm. These are models, these are systems that essentially predict what the next word should be. They are advanced autocompletes. And it turns out that advanced autocompletes are pretty good in terms of solving a lot of the tasks, the problems that we expect AI to solve for us. ChatGPT has been writing programs for us, computer programs, has been developing essays for homeworks, unfortunately, and at the same time, business plans and emails. So it's been proven to be useful in a lot of different tasks. Mm-hmm. There are concerns about ethics, there are concerns about misuse, but this is a brave new world. So there doesn't seem to be any point, at least in the near future, that these advances would stop.
Vahid, why do you think things have rapidly changed so quickly? Like what you said in the very beginning of your statement, that you and your colleagues didn't expect it to advance as quickly as it has. It has kind of felt like we woke up one morning and all of a sudden here's ChatGPT, artificial intelligence is taking over. I was just watching something earlier this week where they now are testing out artificial intelligence as news anchors. People telling the weather and actually anchoring the news in other countries. They're like test modeling this right now. Why do you think it just sort of, it feels like changed overnight? Obviously it didn't, but it does seem like it's rapidly advancing.
Well, there are a few reasons for this, one of which is a major breakthroughs in terms of the technology behind these sort of models. In 2017-2018, a new type of machine learning algorithm was introduced called transformers. And transformers have shown to be much, much better than a lot of the, well, what we now call older architectures, but they're actually less than a decade old. Older architectures in learning sequential data. And they can also learn from very, very huge amounts of data in an efficient manner. So the entirety of the Library of the Congress, plus the entirety of the Reddit archive, the Twitter archive, Wikipedia, and all English news media can form the corpus, the data set from which these models learn. And this can be done efficiently. This is the second factor that I believe has sped up the process. The computing power needed to learn large models from so much data is now within the realm of feasibility. It's not going to cost billions of dollars and years to train these language models. Believe it or not, this is now a matter of, well, few days when you have access to corporate level, Google level, or Microsoft level computing power. And of course, there's been quite a lot of investment in this domain, both from the industry, the AI industry, as well as federal research and development funding.
So we're talking to Dr. Vahid Behzadun this morning, assistant professor of cybersecurity and networks at the University of New Haven, and personally our cybersecurity expert here on the show. We're talking about artificial intelligence. Do you think it's possible, Vahid, and maybe I should hold you here and wait until after traffic and weather, because this is probably going to be a longer answer. Some of the concerns with ChatGPT, for example, you sort of outlined them before. Kids cheating at school and writing their essays through ChatGPT. People applying for jobs and putting cover letters together where professional recruiters couldn't even tell that it was a robot who wrote those cover letters and not authentically made by a human. Also, there are concerns about fake news continuing to spread because at the core of this, these are people putting information into these robots, essentially, to just dumb it down. So at some point, there's going to be flaw or opinion that gets out there. And how do we make sure that when news spreads, it's being spread correctly? These are just some of, like I said, some of the major concerns that have come out nationally. We have back on the show with us Dr. Vahid Behzadun, who is our cybersecurity expert on the show, but also is an assistant professor of cybersecurity and networks, data and computer science at the University of New Haven. We're talking about AI, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT. I had outlined before, Vahid, some of the concerns people have, kids cheating on their papers, people trying to apply for jobs and not having authentic cover letters, even how news spreads, something that we were already struggling with during the pandemic, now heightened fears that these bots can create opinionated news that is not fact-based, for example. What are your thoughts on some of these concerns? And do you think even if the, quote, kinks are worked out, will that really make a huge difference?
Well, Melissa, my research and my research group at the University of New Haven is on AI safety and security. Some of the concerns that you mentioned fall within that category, but these are mostly short-term concerns. If essay writing can now be automated at the level of, well, let's say Mark Twain or a very professional writer, then maybe emphasis on shaping and developing writing skills may become outdated. These are essentially proxy metrics that we use to measure performance in certain tasks. And at the end of the day, we want these tasks, we want to measure the sort of performance to predict whether a particular goal, a particular objective, a particular larger problem can be solved can be attacked by the candidate, by the student, by anyone who we are assessing. And if that task can be completed with a relatively cheap autonomous agent, AI, then maybe emphasis on developing these skills in organic intelligence or human beings is outdated. That said, there are longer-term concerns here. One of the things that my lab is working on is the emergence of deception in these sort of artificial agents, artificially intelligent agents. In certain scenarios, these agents may learn, not program to, but they may learn to become deceptive, as in providing false information intentionally so that the user, the human party of the interaction, ends up doing something that is not to their benefit, that is to the benefit of the agent, but not to them. These are longer-term concerns. And there are, of course, concerns about job security in the long run and the scaling down of the job market. And there are concerns about over-reliance on these systems to the point of missing out on where artificial intelligence makes bad decisions, preventable bad decisions. Examples of this includes not paying attention to the road while, for example, Tesla Autopilot is on and is driving you on the road. All models and all systems in the real world are wrong, but some are useful. And over-reliance on these systems may result in certain catastrophic conditions that are preventable. So maintaining some level of authority over how these artificial intelligence instances or systems interact on our behalf with the world is going to be a longer-term concern.
Yeah, you just pointed out a bunch of stuff that I certainly was not thinking about, but that's why you're the guy who's the cybersecurity expert, and you've got a whole lab and a team that's looking at some of these things. And certainly, Vahid, like I said, I'd love to have you back on to talk more about this. And certainly as we learn more and we see more developments happening, I would love to get your take on it and what you're finding as well. That would be really great.
Always happy to be here, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Again, Dr. Vahid Behzadun, who's an assistant professor of cybersecurity and networks over at the University of New Haven, but also our personal cybersecurity expert here on The Morning Show. And we're so glad to have him back and look forward to talking to him really soon.